It's like one of my staff meetings. All right, buddy. Buddy, I need you to, can you move on from behind me?
What are you doing here?
And we're asking people to really fundamentally change what it means to be a follower of Jesus.
So odd, even thinking that this would happen.
That this is happening to everybody is a really, like, encouraging experience, and just, like, knowing that, like, you're not alone, no matter how much it feels that way.
Yeah, I think what you're experiencing now happens once every couple generations.
Hey there, you're listening to the sound of 48 Degrees North, stories from the Pacific Northwest, where visual journalism students from Western Washington University document the experiences and relationships that define life along the North 48th parallel. As nationwide lifestyle adjustments to the COVID-19 pandemic became increasingly stark, I reached out to different religious figures in Bellingham, Washington, to learn how the virus has affected places of spiritual practice, and, in a broader context, how faith and fellowship have transformed during a time when gathering is forbidden. These conversations were recorded in late April, when social distancing mandates were still enforced across Washington state, and the number of confirmed cases averaged roughly 235 each day, according to the Washington State Department of Health. Thanks for listening. Stay safe out there. Enjoy.
I would say Ecclesia, like my ministry, me as a leader, has been part of the culprit in this, because I have pushed people to mainly just show up to events that the church puts on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And I am now upending that on everyone.
This is Garrett Shelsta, lead pastor at Ecclesia Church, which serves a non-denominational Christian community composed mainly of young adults and college students from the university.
Hey, what it means to follow Jesus is for you to connect with him personally,
mm-hmm.
on your own, and then bring that personal experience into conversations with your community and people, and to help have that conversation directed by a worship gathering on Wednesday nights.
Mm-hmm.
And that is fundamentally different than the ways that we've told people what it means to be a Christian.
Yeah.
And so people are hesitant, understandably so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So some people are excited. Some people have been finding a ton of life in it. Some people haven't even started. So it's all across the spectrum.
Immediately when we recognize the potential gravity of this situation and the virus, we had a huge event coming up, the Holiday of Purim, which is kind of like the Jewish Mardi Gras celebration. The whole community comes out.
For 8 years, Rabbi Joshua Samuels has been a spiritual leader at Congregation Beth Israel. He spoke about the weeks leading up to a seminal Jewish holiday.
That was the very, like, the first few days of March, I think. So in February, we were already trying to figure out what we were going to do. We immediately convened a COVID-19 task force of a few people in our community to try to figure out can the show still go on? Maybe we take away the games where kids are passing like a beanbag to the others, and servers serving food with gloves on, and so people aren't just grabbing food off the table. And we had a funeral also right at the very beginning, and we had to set limits of what, like, contact that people could have. And when there's the gathering back at the synagogue after being in the cemetery.
He also hosted another funeral service through his computer.
You know, speaking with my contact at the funeral home and realizing that there are different protocols changing all the time, who can actually be graveside, who can't. At the time, no one could. So it was really hard having those conversations with the family, saying, look, we can't even be present. We had about 150 different computers log in, and to be honest, it was one of the most meaningful and moving services I've been a part of. And then at the very end of the service, when I said, this concludes our service, go in peace, people were just staying on, and it was silent, and people were just kind of holding the space with the family, the mourners, for several minutes before the husband started to thank people But just those moments alone, it was really incredible. In this instance, everyone kind of understood the gravity of the situation, and it was really beautiful.
It's no small revelation that, like, I mean, we're social creatures by nature. And I guess to an extent, like, everyone has sort of taken that social intimacy for granted a little bit. So it's become even more precious now.
It's so interesting thinking about that social intimacy and just in a religious setting,
mm-hmm.
and how things are going to be different when we are able to come back together and most people feel comfortable. I mean, you know, we sit next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, basically, in our seats. You know, typically, traditionally, men wear a head covering, a kippah, but, and there's like a bin of them that people just grab if they don't have their own. There are prayer books. Like, there's a stack of them. People, you know, hand them out, and you don't have your own. So what's going to happen now? I mean, I don't necessarily want to touch a book that someone just touched or put on a little head covering that's just been sitting in a bin that other people have worn. I mean, you know, shaking people's hands, you know, the way we celebrate and observe is going to change, I think, pretty drastically. And it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of changes and manifests itself in the coming months.
Like when I go out, I have to think, how am I going to negotiate going to the store? I'm an older man, 73 years old, with heart disease, and that puts me in a pretty high risk category. I'm not particularly afraid of death. I've done a lot of practices related to working with death, but there's no sense speeding it up either.
Robin Reich has been associated with Shambhala, a Buddhist organization, since 1978, and a veteran member of the Bellingham Shambhala Center for 30 years and counting.
What are the major changes or impediments that you've noticed for your spiritual practice and your faith?
It's been actually wonderful. It essentially, with that much practice, it's like I'm doing a mini retreat every week. I begin to soften my attachment to my conceptual reality. And that's the purpose from a Buddhist point of view of meditation practice. That's what the Buddha talked about in terms of you're liberated from your own projections and believing they're true.
Could you walk me through the transition to a virtual platform?
When we finally made the decision, then we just basically closed shop and went to all Zoom meetings. So I think everybody was trying to be as responsible as possible, given the, you know, a lot of us are older, so we didn't want the increased risk of one of us contracting it. Plus, we didn't want to be a nexus for people coming in and then catching it from one of us.
On average, about how many people attend different, like, weekly sessions?
Our Monday night open house generally was the most, and it could be up to 25 people, I would say. I mean, the transition has been such that even on Monday nights, the most we have is something like 7 or 8 people.
So Robin goes on to explain how the survival of the center has been jeopardized without any extended long-term planning on the table for various programs like Shambhala training sessions, which are typically funded by donations that generate the profit necessary to keep the whole ship afloat. And according to Robin, membership to the center only provides about half the revenue needed to cover expenses there.
Very luckily for us, our landlady has been sympathetic and has been willing to forego some of the rent while this is going on, and that's helped us tremendously, and I have great deep appreciation for that. But I can see, you know, it's a shaky time in a more fundamental sense.
I could not agree more. I'm young enough where I feel like I have not lived through any sort of transient, transcendental experience in which your whole reality is totally shifted. I mean, I think I might have been 3 when 9/11 occurred.
I think even that pales in comparison to this. This is magnitudes. I mean, in my lifetime, maybe the closest, and it was even before my time, would have been World War II.
Mm.
That affected everybody, but in a different way. I mean, then people were bound together. Everybody was in it. It was a war effort.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now we have a lot of divisiveness as to what is the trade-off between life and the economic well-being. Just seeing so many people in this country and the world suffering so deeply. Mm-hmm. And that's partly why I practice too, because in a sense practicing, unless it's getting to making me so I can be of greater help to others.
Now, since life looks so different for all of us, it's really interesting and exciting to hear all the different ways that people are doing life now that quarantine is part of our routine.
This is Alina Simone, a community group leader with Ecclesia Bellingham and Western Student. She has been attending Ecclesia for almost 2 years now.
Could you walk me through your Easter dinner or any celebrations or service that happened on Easter?
Yeah, normally on Easter, I would be in my hometown with my family. This year, I spent Easter alone in my bedroom. I woke up and made myself breakfast and watched the Bellingham CTK live stream of their Sunday church service on my laptop. And I video chatted my parents later that day as they celebrated Easter with my older brother back in our hometown. And I called my younger sister at her house in the youth district in Seattle. And it was a nice opportunity to take stock of like different blessings that I had. And like, even like when you're not in the same town, I think that like that being able to know that that this is happening to everybody is a really like encouraging experience, and just like knowing that like you're not alone no matter how much it feels that way. I think that's what's like super cool about doing live stream services like on like all at the same time, like on Wednesday night. I'm still like sitting at home in my bedroom on my laptop alone, but I get to know that there are at least 100 people gathered from like bedrooms or living rooms or like laptops to phones, like they're all doing the same thing that I am. And it really helps me feel like I'm still part of something and that I'm not doing this all by myself, when that is a really easy mentality to fall into.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's prep the lemon juice and the lemon zest. So you want to wash the outside of your lemon and then get some sort of a cheese grater or a zest or whatever you have. If you don't have anything, you can use a serrated knife and just kind of rub the serrated knife on the top of the lemon.
One night, I reached out to another student named Rachel, who's been actively involved with the Jewish community on campus and pretty invested in exploring her Jewish heritage through an organization called Hillel, which provides a space for students to learn about and celebrate all facets of the Jewish experience. When I asked about arranging an interview, she actually invited me to join a virtual baking night where a bunch of people would be logging on from separate kitchens to follow a recipe and sort of spend some quality time together, baking bread, sharing conversation, and a mutual activity. So she shared the link, and I jumped online.
I've heard from every one in the Jewish community, like, there's people wanting to make more connection now. We were like, okay, let's reach out to our people. Let's look for an event. It never stopped. I don't think anything could stop it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like celebrating most all Jewish holidays has a lot to do with bringing the community together to celebrate. And it was kind of weird this time around because we weren't able to see each other in person like I celebrated here at my apartment.
Another Western student and Hillel member, Shu Hoff CM, said her family normally invites a few close friends over for Passover Seder, except this year, she said her immediate family guided like 20 to 30 people through the holiday rituals over Zoom, something completely different that included her extended relatives living in Israel for the first time, since Shu Hoff only visits that side of her family during the summer.
So it was a really cool experience to be able to see my family during Passover and celebrate with them during their like Passover time. It was like in the morning here, and get to connect with them where we usually wouldn't be able to.
As people continued mixing ingredients and sharing anecdotes, Rachel seemed pretty disappointed about not being able to spend Passover with her family. But she also pointed out other challenges that different devoutly religious families experience, aside from physical distance.
So my extended family is Orthodox, which means that they are very observant of like the letter of the law in Judaism. So they do not use electricity, like computers, TV, whatever, on Shabbat or high holidays. I was able to do the Zoom through the synagogue, but like any of my family, they are not going to be Zooming any of the holidays. It'd be like sacrilegious to them, to each their own. And I know a lot of other people who have probably similar family situations where unfortunately they're not able to connect with them right now in the times they want to be able to.
Why does community matter, in your opinion?
I think that people have a desire to connect. And when I say connect, I mean they want to be known for who they truly are. And so they want to be known, but they also, we have a deep desire to know others.
As I wrapped up each conversation, I decided to finish the interviews with a question that seemed to speak directly to the importance and resilience of faith. Why does community matter? To me, those four words were the driving force behind what I aimed to discover about the endurance of the human spirit, that innate urge to reach out to one another, to forge connection, adapt to change, and continue moving forward, if only because we can't turn back.
And what we thought was that we could do that in digital online spaces, and then in-person spaces weren't that important. And what we're seeing is that actually probably the only thing that was holding us together were those in-person interactions. Now that we don't have them, like as the old song goes, you don't know what you have until it's gone.
Oh yeah.
You know, that taxi cab, I think. Yeah. Paradise, and you put up a parking lot.
Paradise and put up a parking
lot. You've been listening to The Sound of 48 Degrees North, stories from the Pacific Northwest. This episode was written and produced by Brooke Wilson, with support from the Spring 2020 Advanced Visual Journalism Cohort at Western Washington University. Thanks for listening, and remember to stay safe and healthy out there.